Good day, and welcome to the SNC-Lavalin's third quarter 2017 earnings conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Denis Jasmin. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. With me today are Neil Bruce, President and CEO, and Sylvain Girard, Executive Vice President and CFO. Our earnings announcement was released this morning, and we have posted a slide presentation on the investors section of our website. If you are not using today's webcast, please ensure to open the presentation, as we will refer to it during this call. The recording of today's call and webcast will also be available on our website within 24 hours. Before we begin, I would like to ask everyone to limit themselves to two or three questions to ensure that all analysts have an opportunity to participate. You are welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. I would also like to draw your attention to slide 3 of the presentation. Information in this presentation and remarks made by the speakers today will contain statements about expected future events and financial results that are forward-looking and therefore subject to risk and uncertainties. These forward-looking statements represent our expectation as of today and accordingly are subject to change. Results may differ materially. We disclaim any obligation to update any forward-looking statements except as required by law. A description of the risk factors that may affect future results is contained in the company's MD&A, available on our website and in our filings with the Canadian Securities Administrators. During today's call, we will also discuss certain non-IFRS financial numbers. You can find reconciliations of these numbers with comparable IFRS measure in the presentation and in our MD&A. With that, I will turn the conference over to Neil Bruce. Neil?
Thank you, Denis, and good afternoon, everyone. On today's call, I'll briefly review our Q3 results and discuss the performance of our five sectors. Sylvain will then cover the Q3 financial aspects in a bit more detail. Let me start by saying that I'm pleased overall with our third quarter, and particularly with Atkins' first contribution to our results. This was a transformational acquisition, and we can already see its impact on our revenues, EBIT margin, backlog, and balance sheet. I'm also very pleased with the progress of the integration, and I will discuss this in more detail in a moment. Let's start on slide 4. Our net income for Q3 2017 was $104 million, a significant increase compared with the $43 million in the same quarter of last year. Adjusted net income from ENC also increased significantly to $89 million, or 51 cents per diluted share. Oil and gas returned to a more normal run rate, as we flagged in Q2. Infrastructure continued to perform very well, and Atkins generated over $800 million of revenues with a 9.1 EBIT margin. Total new project awards within our existing business in the quarter was strong at $1.5 billion, and this growth came in spite of the absence of any of the well-publicized major Canadian infrastructure projects yet to be awarded. Along with the contribution of $2 billion of backlog from Atkins, this left our total backlog at $11.3 billion. The Atkins acquisition and its financing have now been reflected in our balance sheet. We believe we have improved our balance sheet efficiency while maintaining adequate liquidity to continue with our stated growth strategy. Our recourse debt to capital ratio is now 23.77, below our 30.70 objective, and Sylvain will cover our capital structure and debt ratios in more detail shortly. We are also maintaining our 2017 outlook for an adjusted diluted EPS from ENC in the range of $2 to $2.20. We anticipate that most of our previously announced cost synergies relating to Atkins acquisition, some $30 million in 2017, out of the $120 million we identified at the time of the transaction, will be delivered in Q4. Hence the slightly different weighting of earnings between quarters in the second half of our financial year. Let's now look at each of our sectors, starting at slide 5. Our oil and gas sector returned to a more normal long-term EBIT margin with a trailing 12-month EBIT back at 7%, in line with our expected margin range of 6 to 7%. We are also pleased with the business development activities in oil and gas fueled by the higher oil price, and we're particularly pleased with the recently announced Master Services Agreement award by Chevron for systems completion support on all of their major capital projects worldwide. We continue to be encouraged by many large projects and sustaining capital prospects ahead, particularly in the Middle East and the United States. In Q3, we reappointed Chris Brown as president of the sector now that the Yadkins integration process is nearing completion. Turning to slide 6, we continue to see improving signs of growth in our mining and metallurgy sector, and we're very pleased with the backlog trend, which now stands at $700 million. Revenues increased in Q3 to $107 million, the highest quarter of the year, albeit margins will remain at a current lower level until some recently awarded projects are fully mobilized early in 2018. Examples of recent awards include the recently announced notice to proceed for a large ammonia EPC project in Oman, as well as the contract for the development of engineering design and licensing services for a fertilizer project in Russia. Looking ahead, we believe there is good momentum with the wide variety of attractive prospects, particularly outside of North America. Moving to slide 7, the power sector overall continues to do well, despite the fact that sector EBIT margin was impacted in the quarter by poor performance on a thermal power plant project in the U.S. We believe that a normal long-term EBIT margin for this sector should be between 7 and 9%. Looking ahead, we continue to grow our clean energy portfolio in renewable energy, hydro, T&D. We are targeting the market in selective geographies where we already have a presence. We expect these markets to continue to grow significantly. Within thermal power, we are continuing to be much more selective on projects within this market, focusing primarily on service-only contracts. The nuclear market continues to be an important priority for us as our clients are forecasting significant investments in life extensions, sustaining capital, and decommissioning. We also see the possibility of some new build opportunities in the future, capitalizing on the whole life cycle capabilities. Now turning to infrastructure sector on slide 8. This sector has again performed very well this quarter. We're pleased with the stable execution performance and EBIT margin, as well as the recent contracts awards. Of note are the contracts from Husky Energy for the White Rose project and the design engineering and financing for the expansion of a maintenance and storage facility for stage 2 of the Confederation Line in Ottawa. Our three major projects, Ottawa LRT Phase 1, Eglinton, and the new Champlain Bridge, are progressing well. We have recently implemented a variety of acceleration measures for the bridge, and discussions are progressing well with our supportive public partner to confirm and agree on the costs associated with these initiatives. We continue to target the delivery of the bridge in December 2018 as originally planned. Revenue backlog is strong despite the lack of major Canadian infrastructure project awards, the scale and complexity of which are unprecedented. The infrastructure sector is very active around the globe, but especially in Canada. With the addition of Atkins, we believe SNC is well positioned to win its fair share of these exciting multi-billion dollar opportunities, and we're continuing to identify new prospects in our key geographies. This brings me to our newest sector on slide 9. We're pleased with Atkins' first results within SNC-Lavalin. Atkins delivered a good quarter with $805 million of revenue and an EBIT of 9.1%. Backlog stood at $2 billion at the end of September. We're also pleased with the contract award in August for the resignaling of the Norwich to Yarmouth to Lowestoft route by Network Rail in the UK, and we continue to be encouraged by Atkins' prospects around the UK and European markets. There is a high level of government investment in its key markets and high-quality long-term prospects. we believe there is an increasing demand for third-party funding of transport infrastructure in an effort to reduce the whole life cycle costs, as well as an increased appetite to adopt new technology solutions to innovate and increase value. We're also encouraged by Acton's prospects in the US. We have secured a number of opportunities in our public and private and transportation businesses. Additional work is being driven by demand in the federal business as we support the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, in its recovery and humanitarian activities following the recent hurricanes. And lastly, in the Middle East, the property sector continues to show good levels of activity, and we're currently bidding on a variety of attractive prospects in the rail and transit sector across the region. I will now give you a brief update on the integration process we have been undertaking with Atkins. In short, we're pleased with where we are, and we are very much on track with our timetable, costs, and expected synergies. We have just completed our 100-day integration planning period and will soon be in a position to implement the recommendations to combine the SNC-Lavalin and Atkins service delivery capabilities where it allows us to better support our clients' requirements. Our goal to have the integration fully complete by the end of the year is in our sights. We remain on track to deliver run rate cost synergies of $120 million by the end of next year, including $30 million, which, as I mentioned earlier, we expect to deliver in Q4 2017. The combined SNC-Lavalin and Atkins senior management teams have completed many operational workshops, integrated key account management across the two businesses, leveraging Faithful and Gould, technical capabilities, and our enhanced geographic presence are all expected to contribute to our development in the short and medium term. We continue to identify many additional opportunities in our key markets that will further support our growth agenda, especially in the area of digital technologies. Earlier this week, we announced the acquisition of DTS, a leader in digital asset management and geographic information systems within the North American market, and specifically in the U.S. DTS strengthens and complements Atkins design and consultancy services, creating an end-to-end enterprise digital asset management service offering for infrastructure clients. In addition, DTS geospatial information systems and software programming capabilities enhances the full suite of Atkins digital service offerings and will enable us to offer full asset lifecycle information management. We believe this acquisition will bring added value to our organization by allowing us to accelerate the nature and pace of delivery and help our clients respond to the increasing challenges of digitization and digital asset management across all of SNC-Lavalin's core sectors. And lastly, let's turn to slide 10. I am very pleased with the completion of BBGI's investment in four of our assets through the SNC-Lavalin Infrastructure Partners LP vehicle. That transaction demonstrated SNC-Lavalin's full lifecycle expertise and ability to create significant value by monetizing mature assets and recycling the proceeds into new projects. One more asset is expected to be transferred to this vehicle by the end of the current year. As for Highway 407, this asset continues to deliver good results with a revenue increase of 8.5% in Q3 compared with last year. So to sum up, we're pleased overall with the Q3 results, with Atkins delivering a very robust quarter for the first time as part of the SNC-Lavalin family. Our backlog and our high-quality pipeline across our key sectors and geographies continues to give us confidence in executing on our near-term earnings guidance and our longer-range 2020 vision. We are maintaining our 2017 guidance, as I said earlier, and expect Q4 to be the main beneficiary of the first wave of cost synergies relating to our transformational deal. With that, I'll pass the call over to Sylvain to go over some of the financial results in more detail.
Thank you, Neil. Good afternoon, everyone. I'll start on slide 11.
Total revenues for Q3 2017 totaled $2.6 billion, compared to $2.2 billion for Q3 2016. The variance was mainly due to higher E&C revenues, largely attributable to the incremental revenues from Atkins and higher revenues from mining and metallurgy, partially offset by revenues decreases in infrastructure, oil and gas, and power segments. The decrease in oil and gas was mainly due to lower revenues in the LNG sector, partly offset by higher revenues from projects in the Middle East and Americas. The decrease in power was mainly due to lower revenues in the thermal and transmission and distribution subsegments, partially offset by an increase in nuclear. And the decrease in infrastructure is principally attributable to the disposal in December 2016 of SNC-Lavalin's non-core E&C business in France and real estate facilities management business in Canada. Total SG&A expenses in Q3 2017 amounted to $399 million compared to $141 million in Q3 2016. The increase was mainly due to the incremental SG&A from the acquisition of Atkins and up to a $33 million favorable impact from revised estimates on legacy sites, environmental liabilities, and other assets retirement obligations recorded in Q3 2016. If we exclude these two elements, SG&A expenses were actually about 12% lower, mainly due to the ongoing success of the Operational Excellence Program. Total adjusted EBITDA amounted to $250 million with a margin of 9.5%, compared to $93 million and a margin of 4.3% in Q3 2016. The increase was mainly due to the contributions from ENC, which amounted to $196 million in Q3 2017 with a margin of 7.6%, significantly higher than Q3 2016. This increase mainly reflects a positive EBIT from the oil and gas segment compared to a loss in Q3 2016, an incremental EBIT from Atkins, and a higher EBIT from infrastructure, partially offset by a decrease in EBIT from power and mining and metallurgy. IFRS consolidated net income was $104 million, or 59 cents per diluted share, compared with $43 million, or 29 cents per diluted share for the corresponding period in 2016. Q3 2017 IFRS net income included a net gain after tax of $26 million from the partial disposal associated with the transfer of four of our capital investments to SNC-Lavalin Infrastructure Partners, LP. The quarter also included acquisition-related and integration costs of $30 million after taxes, in line with our guidance, as well as amortization of intangible assets related to business combinations of $28 million after tax. Adjusted consolidated net income stood at $137 million, or 78 cents per diluted share, compared to $67 million, or 45 cents per diluted share. The increase is mainly due to the adjusted net income from ENC, which amounted to $89 million, or 51 cents per diluted share, in Q3 2017, versus $24 million, or 16 cents per diluted share, in Q3 2016. Mainly due to a higher segment EBIT, partially offset by an increase in income taxes and financial expenses. The effective tax rate increase in the quarter was mainly due to non-deductible expenses and other permanent items, such as costs related to the Atkins acquisition, partially offset by the impact of geographic mix, while the increase in financial expenses was largely attributable to the Atkins acquisition financing. Our net recourse debt to adjusted EBITDA ratio at September 30, 2017 was 1.1, and our revenue backlog totaled $11.3 billion at the end of September. The revenue backlog balance included $2 billion from Atkins, which from a size and profitability perspective, more than compensated for the $950 million backlog of non-core real estate facilities management business in Canada and local operations in France, which was included in our balance in September 2016, but divested in December 2016. I will shortly get into the backlog, capital structure, and debt ratios in more details. Now turning to slide 12. We see that the Q3 2017 oil and gas and infrastructure EBIT performances were higher than in Q3 2016. while power and mining and metallurgy were lower. Mining and metallurgy's $11 million variation was mainly due to a decrease in the gross margin ratio, including a negative reforecast on a project in South America, partially offset by higher volume and lower SG&A. The $90 million variation in oil and gas was mainly attributable to an increase in the gross margin ratio, including a net positive amount of $45 million, principally due to a commercial settlement on a major project nearing completion, partially offset by lower revenues and by negative net impact of cost and revenue reforecast on certain contracts, mainly in the Middle East. Q3 2016 also had substantial unfavorable cost reforecast. Looking at our power sector, we had a $14 million decrease in EBIT, which was mainly due to a lower level of activity and a decrease in the gross margin ratio, which was negatively impacted by a $44 million cost reforecast on a gas-fired combined cycle power plant in the United States, partially offset by a net positive impact of $26 million due to a decrease in forecasted costs on certain projects and a favorable outcome from the closeout of the gas-fired combined cycle power plant. These decreases were also partially offset by lower SG&A. The infrastructure sector had another strong quarter and recorded a 10.7% EBIT margin in the quarter. And lastly, Atkins had a good quarter in line with our expectations with $73 million of EBIT. Moving on to slide 13. Our diversified revenue backlog at quarter end totaled $11.3 billion compared to $10.7 billion at December 31, 2016. As mentioned earlier, Atkins' backlog had been added to the company's backlog, and we also see that the mining and metallurgy backlog has significantly increased. The breakdown by contract types is now 25% in reimbursable contracts and 55% in fixed-price contracts. Atkins' revenue backlog is currently presented separately as it is calculated differently than SNC-Lavalin and comprises a significant number of low-dollar value and short-term projects, mainly in consulting and design, with limited procurement and construction risks. Note that the company is currently assessing the impact of IFRS 15 on its backlog reporting policy, and we'll update the market in due course. Turning to slide 14. Our operations essentially used $343 million in cash in Q3 2017. This usage was mainly from higher than anticipated working capital requirements on certain major projects, non-recurring payments for liabilities related to employee benefits that were triggered by the acquisition of Atkins, non-recurring acquisition cost payments, and an increase in interest paid. This usage was partially offset by a higher EBIT from ENC and a decrease in taxes paid. The right-hand side of the slide identifies the main components of the decrease in cash for 2017. Other than the cash flows from operations, we see that the cash movements were caused by the acquisitions of Atkins and its financing, CapEx spent mostly on projects, and our quarterly dividends, partially offset by a $173 million proceed from the disposal of our head office building and a $90 million proceed from the transfer of the initial four seed assets into the Infrastructure Partnership Fund. Moving to slide 15. As of September 30, 2017, the company continues to maintain adequate liquidity to pursue its growth strategy with $642 million of cash and cash equivalents, $884 million of net recourse debt, and $2 billion in unused capacity under our $2.75 billion committed revolving credit facility. If we incorporate a 12-month pro forma for Atkins adjusted EBITDA, the net recourse debt to adjusted EBITDA ratio was 1.1. Recourse debt over total capital is now 23-77, below the company's objective, which is not to surpass a ratio of 30-70. Now moving on to the last slide. We are maintaining our 2017 outlook range for an adjusted diluted EPS from ENC in the range of $2 to $2.20. We are also maintaining our adjusted diluted consolidated EPS disclosed during our September Investor Day in the range of $3.10 and $3.30, which represents an increase between 20 and 28% compared to $2.58 achieved in 2016. This concludes my presentation. We can now open the lines for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We'll take the first question from the line of Anthony Zika with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Neil, with reference to the reforecast in mining and metallurgy and power, is there a risk that these losses related to the projects could become larger? And could you give us some color on the gas-fired project in the United States, and could they potentially reverse?
Well, starting with the thermal project in the U.S., I mean, we feel like we're pretty much boxed off there. And as we have been pretty clear in signaling for all the way through this year, I mean, it's an area, in terms of lump sum contracts within thermal, we've basically not approved any new projects throughout the year. So this is our final operational project that we need to close off. And then our big emphasis is we are looking to push that business into services only business. So therefore, we won't be doing any lump sum contracts there. So I think this is the last one. It is very well progressed. We think we've taken a prudent view. So that's probably the summary of that. In mining, mining's sort of slightly different. I mean, it's coming off the bottom of, a lowest trough and bottom that the mining industry has been in, and certainly companies, you know, we're no different to our main competitors. And I think we're really not going to get a stable average margin in mining until we really kick into a couple of the bigger projects where we get a bit of volume going in there. You know, the revenues are still not huge, therefore, you know, the margin on any given quarter could go up and down, you know, a fair bit. And it's sort of fairly meaningless in terms of dollar value itself. So I think what we're indicating is that come Q1 next year and then for the rest of the year, we would expect mining to be on a more stable EBIT margin.
Okay. And could you please provide us your insights around the SNC's bidding pipeline, and what do you see as short-term potential catalysts here?
Well, I mean, we've got a huge pipeline, and you know, I think we've emphasised a fair bit on Canadian infrastructure. You know, and one of the one of the biggest opportunities that we're all very excited about is clearly the REM project in Montreal. I mean, it's a huge contract. And we certainly have submitted bids on both of the contracts in terms of the EPC and on the trains and the O&M piece. And it's a short bid list. So, you know, we're very excited about that. I mean, it's a massive contract with massive potential, and that's probably the biggest opportunity that's there. But there's also some other contracts that have slipped a bit to the right, but are still, you know, are still moving. Like Finch, for instance, is still on the books. The mining sector have got four main sort of fairly large contracts again, which tend to be in the sort of fertilizer or processing type facilities. Oil and gas is, I think the award that we got with Chevron in terms of a worldwide agreement on all of their capital assets as the oil price begins to come up is really pretty exciting, and they're pursuing a wide range a wide range of opportunities. And then nuclear, has just got some massive opportunities. I think people probably saw in the papers or on the news around, you know, the two CANDU nuclear new builds in Argentina appear to continue to go forward, and we're already working on the front end of that. There are numerous, I think it's 14 D&D opportunities in the U.S. that are all funded, which are real prospects for next year, and Atkins brings us that D&D capabilities. So there's huge prospects there as well. And then the nuclear work that we're doing in Ontario as well is continues to go on, and that's long-term, you know, the next 8 years in terms of life extension work. So we've got a huge pipeline of activities, and we hope very soon, before the end of the year and into the first quarter, to hear on a couple of the really big projects there.
Great. And one quick one. Once Atkins is fully integrated and optimized, is it still your goal to potentially double SNC size over the next few years?
So I think if you're referring to the Vision 2020 and $5 EPS, then the answer is yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll now take the next question from the line of Mona Nazir with Laurentian Bank. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my questions. Firstly, I know that there's been some fluctuations in the EBIT margins, which you touched on. The biggest variance year over year stem from the oil and gas division, and we saw a $45 million commercial settlement positively impact the EBIT this quarter. And I know that there was some negative impact of provisions last quarter. Just wondering, what would be a good run rate to use, not factoring in these kind of volatile one-time items?
Well, I think previously we talked about an expectation that we're going to be in the 6-7%. You know, if you take it on a, you know, on an annual basis, and I think that's all still valid. It's you know, we would really like for to be able to consistently deliver quarter by quarter on a very stable basis, but you know, the business isn't like that. But we are pretty confident about our ability to forecast through in terms of longer than just a quarter by quarter. And back to your specific question, we still maintain that we see 6-7% as the long term stable margin.
Thank you. And then just secondly, I'm wondering if you could touch on the cash cycle. We saw a significant increase in cash used in operating activities driven by net working capital items. How do we expect this to trend going forward? Is it possible to expect a positive contribution from working capital next quarter or next year on a net basis, and that's assuming quarterly ebbs and flows?
Yeah, I think maybe I'll take that one. So maybe first on the quarter a little bit. You know, this quarter had a few, I guess, non-recurring items in it, and I mentioned the acquisition-related cash out that happened. So just to give some perspective to everyone, we had about $150 million worth of that operating cash flow that was linked to that. So that explains a little bit the usage. Now, in terms of our cycle, you know, the large projects will tend to have a more difficult profile to forecast for everybody, because we tend to we'll have milestones that will trigger payments, and then hopefully we get into cash flow positive when we start the projects. But sometimes, as projects, we might end up in change order situations or claim situation, which will delay the cash cycle that we anticipated. So that will create some volatility in that. As we look at Q4, we are expecting Q4 to be stronger than Q3. So we are expecting Q4 to be a recovery there, and an improvement in our working capital position. So just to maybe just to give an example on what I touched earlier on the acquisition related stuff, we had some share based payment, for example, that came with the acquisition. So all these costs That cost was accrued, for example, prior to our ownership of Atkins, and it did not hit our P&L, but it was a cash out that followed shortly after the acquisition. So that's one example. Yeah.
Okay.
That answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you. I'll step back. Thank you.
We'll now take our next question from the line of Benoit Poirier with Desjardins Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. I was wondering if you could provide some color about Atkins when we look at the sustainability of the margins. I mean, they reported 9.1 on adjusted basis, so just one wondering if there was any particular element in Atkins, and is there room to improve that? Thank you.
Yeah, well, we see that as we see that as a sustainable sort of long-term margin that we are that we're targeting. As Q4 synergies kick in, we would expect to see that go up a little bit. So from a from a metric perspective of looking at Atkins at the time, you know, prior to the acquisition, that roughly sort of an 8% business, then, you know, our metric really is by the time some of the synergies kick in there, we expect it to be 9+. And, you know, we were really encouraged and really pleased to see that that's actually what was delivered in the first quarter of operations within SNC-Lavalin.
Okay, perfect. And Neil, I know we are still under consultation, but could you provide an update on the timeline on the DPA? Any expectation on your side?
I think all of that is progressing well in terms of, you know, consultation was launched, both for that and the integrity framework. And that runs through to the 17th of November, so just a couple of weeks to go. We've completed our submission. I mean, we need to bear in mind that this is the potential of a deferred prosecution agreement legislation for Canadian companies, not specifically for SNC-Lavalin. We've submitted our comprehensive submission, which anybody can go on actually to our website. And if you're interested, you can go on there and you can click on that and see our submission. And that's, you know, that's our view on it and why we think it's good for a Canadian business. We've been encouraged by the amount of feedback generally within both the business community, some financial, legal aspects, sectors, and academia as well, who fully support the need for Canadian business and Canadian-headquartered companies to be on a level playing field with our U.S. competitors and European competitors, as well as the fact that we believe it's a far better framework in terms of making sure that it gives companies the ability to self-disclose and do all the right things. So we're encouraged with that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We'll now take the next question from the line of Jacob Bout with CIBC. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I want to ask about the margin improvement on the infrastructure side. Talk a little bit about what's driving that and the sustainability. Is this just a mix issue? Or?
I think it's a combination of two things. The guys are performing really well. I mean, they are delivering like clockwork on the main big projects that they've got. They also have a lot of more consulting contracts that the engineering group within infrastructure also do. The O&M group are also performing really well. There's a couple of completions in there, nearing completion, and so therefore I wouldn't take this quarter's margin and think that that's going to be sustainable. We see the infra margin more than in the 6 to 7% range, and I think it goes back a little bit to what we said before, which is as we kick in 2018, our internal target and hurdle rate for our sectors really is a minimum of 7%. So the infrastructure guys are getting there, and I think from an infrastructure sector perspective, if they can achieve that hurdle, then they're performing well.
My next question, just on the CCCI bid for Aecon, is this creating issues for S&C? And can you talk a bit about the relationship between Atkins and CCCI?
Okay. So from a, I mean, first thing to say is that, you know, Aecon and SNC-Lavalin have had a long and very productive working relationship that will continue. We see the, you know, in terms of, you know, that acquisition and completion of that acquisition, that's really got nothing to do with us at this point in time. I mean, that's all subject to Competitions Act, Investment Act, and security considerations. That's, you know, the government will make decisions around, or government bodies will make decisions around all of that. So we continue to be big supporter and hopefully a great partner for Aecon as we go through there. You know, if there is any other direction that this goes in, you know, through end of first quarter next year for whatever reason, then we will be in absolute dialogue with John and his team to make sure that, you know, we continue to support each other going forward, you know, whether it's approved or it's not approved or there's any variation of that. So from our perspective, it's their business until the thing is either approved or not. On the relationship with Atkins, they've got, again, a very productive JV, which was more aimed at providing consultancy services in the pre-construction build arena in Asia. That's been a relationship that's been there for a number of years. And again, we just see that as an opportunity for us to further build on that partnership, especially in Asia. So again, we see that as a good thing.
Thank you.
We'll now take the next question from the line of Derek Sprunk with RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Just with Atkins in the UK, are you seeing more and more kind of P3 type of projects in the UK? And does your combination with Atkins better position you to bid on those type of contracts?
Well, I think the the P3 or PPP type contracts in the UK was more of a forefront. They certainly were utilising that model before most other countries or regions. They turned away a bit from that, and certainly are I would say you know quite a way behind where Canada is today in terms of the utilisation of that these different models. So I don't necessarily see P3 expanding or expanding beyond where it is. And in terms of the work that Atkins do for, you know, government funded, or locally funded infrastructure, transportation, the areas that we are operating in is very much in the front end rather than the big complete project life cycle, and we'll probably stay in that arena.
Okay. And with the integration of Atkins, seems like your cost synergies are on track. Just with regards to culture and the employee base as you integrate the two companies, how is that going, and has there been any sort of high-level leaves at Atkins following the acquisition?
First of all, I mean, apart from the synergies that we implemented straight away, i.e., you know, no need for a board, no need for the IR group, no need for some of the consulting aspects and support, no, there has been nobody that were part of our plans to keep that's left since the acquisition was completed in July, which is fantastic. That's exactly where we want it to be.
Okay, that makes sense. And just one more quickly for me. If we were to exclude Atkins and some of the divestitures that you made, the core ENC revenue on a year-over-year basis, you know, would be down roughly, you know, 10%. Is that where you expect it to be, and is that what we should be thinking about as on the core legacy ENC business over the next few quarters on a year-over-year basis?
Well, what you should expect is what we've been, I think, fairly clear about for quite a while now, which is, you know, revenues, you know, winning work, delivering work, revenues is really important, but it's not our main priority. We want to, you know, earnings, bottom line, efficiency, margin delivery is our priority. And we've been going through a fairly robust margin improvement, bottom line efficiency program for the last couple of years. And as you can see, we divested, at the back end of last year, we divested part of O&M in France because basically, you know, it was never going to meet our hurdle criteria, and it really didn't add anything to any other part of the business. You've heard on this call and within these results that, you know, for the whole year now we've been downsizing our thermal group, our EPC group within thermal. So we'll continue to do that. And we are, you know, by the end of this year, once we've fully integrated Atkins, then we'll be in a place where we think we've got the business that within the individual sectors can deliver, have the potential to deliver our internal 7% hurdle rates, plus looking to increase the Atkins margin as well. So the focus is very much on, I mean, revenues are important, but we don't want to chase revenues that don't add significantly to our earnings and our bottom line.
Okay. Thank you very much, Neil.
Thank you.
We'll now take the next question from the line of Yuri Link with Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. Maybe one for Sylvain. Just on the synergies, I just want to clarify that it's safe to assume Q3 had, I assume, very little, if any, in the way of cost synergies. And when you say the fourth quarter will have $30 million, is that an actual $30 million, which seems kind of big to me, or is that an annualized rate of $30 million, so $7, $8 million in Q4?
Actually, it's 30 between Q3 and Q4. And we did already have some synergies in Q3. But there's more in Q4 than in Q3. But 30 of real cost out. It's not run rate by the end of Q4. It's 30 of real cost out.
Okay. And then 30 a quarter gets you to your 120. That's the math on that?
Not quite. I mean, by the end of 18, we want to be at a run rate of 120 out. So I guess when we get the 30, we got this year, we got the first 30, and that carries on obviously into the next year. There's some carryover of that. And then there'll be more savings that will come, that would be coming through the year, leaving us with a run rate of 120 at the end of 18.
Okay. maybe we can take that. Because 120 is 30 million a quarter. That's my where I'm confused. But
okay, well, we can take it up by. But I think what you can count on for this year is minus 30 real dollars.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So obviously some of that carries into next year. So.
Got it. Yeah. Can you maybe just help us also, given these the way the synergies are coming in, and I don't know if Atkins had much different seasonality than SNC, but how should full year adjusted E&C earnings be distributed? Maybe if you just wanted to give us first half versus second half, is one going to be stronger than the other? Any help you can give us on just modeling half year or quarters would be even better going forward?
Well, I think, so their strongest quarter is actually what is our Q1. That's typically how their numbers roll up because it historically it was their last quarter because they had a year end at March 31st, right? And also being in the UK and doing a lot of government business that kind of coincides with the fiscal year end for a lot of entities over there. So that's what we expect to see. So in terms of modeling, that's what you should count on. And then you could probably figure out from their reported statements as they were a public company a little bit how that phases. They were reporting semi-annually, but you could probably figure out a quarterly profile that would make sense from there.
Okay. Last question for me. Just back to the working capital. I mean, when I see a large outflow like that in the context of a company that has a lot of fixed price projects, I get a little bit nervous, to be honest. How much of that cash outflow is due to WIP, perhaps, where you're not able to bill a client because you're in disputes or something like that. Just any further color on the composition of that cash outflow. And when you say it's going to be better in the fourth quarter, I mean, will we see a positive contribution or will we still have an investment in working capital?
So in Q4, we're looking for an improving working capital balance, so meaning cash generated out of working capital. That's what we're hoping for. So that's on that. And then in terms of the dynamics, so as I mentioned, there's quite a fair amount of these non-recurring items and charges. So that accounts for, like I said, 150 of the 343. Then on the rest, it's sometimes it's WIP, sometimes it's AR. It depends on how it depends on the project, really. I think it's always about timing. So what I can tell you as an example, I mean, we've talked about a number of commercial settlements, and just in October, for example, one of those settlements, the cash shortly follows that. So we did receive a large amount of money. Typically, the cash piece, those settlement will be higher than the margin impact of them just because there's the work has been done and the billing is just higher than the margin, obviously. So that's as an example, that's kind of what happened to us in the quarter where we got the cash unfortunately in October, but it's just because the settlement came through really at the end. So it's really hard to, with the quarterly profile and everything, it's hard to get everything in the box at the right time. So for sure, when we look at the Middle East region, when we look at our overall oil and gas business, we had to switch from IOCs to NOCs, which has kind of changed our cash cycle. NOCs are longer in payments, and that's where you get into the WIP discussion of trying to read a bill before you can invoice and so forth. So that's clearly been causing us a drag, and we see some of the impacts in this year, and in Q3 particularly. So that's what I see to that.
Okay, very helpful. I'll turn it over there. Thanks, guys.
We'll now take the next question from the line of Michael Tupholme with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good afternoon. Sylvain, you you talk in some detail about some of the puts and takes in the various segments in terms of favorable reforecasts, unfavorable reforecasts, the commercial settlement in oil and gas. When I look through all of that information, though, it seems to me that on an overall net basis, there was maybe an overall benefit in the quarter, including the commercial settlement. And I'm just wondering if you can confirm if that was the case and ideally quantify it.
In terms of if you take them all together, and is it positive? I mean, oil and gas positive. Power had a net negative. You can do the math there. The 44 minus the 26. Infra had some positive movements as well. So, yes, you'd be correct. In total, it's positive. The mining item is small in size compared to any of the others, to be honest. I mean, we disclose it more because it went along the profile of the mining business at this stage, so it was noticeable for them. But it's very small in size compared to the other stuff you see in the other segments.
Okay. I guess the mining one, I understand that makes sense. It not being overly large. Within oil and gas, there's the commercial settlement on the positive side, and then there's talk about a partial offset.
Yeah.
How significant was that offset?
Well, the commercial settlement is much bigger than the offset. Let's put it that way.
Okay. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Just back on.
So just to be clear, in oil and gas, it's a net positive. If that's what you're looking for, it's clearly a net positive.
Right. So it's not quite as large as $45 million on a net basis. It's meaningful.
Yeah.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you. Just back on, I guess, one of Yuri's questions about the seasonality within Atkins. If we look at the third quarter revenues of $805 million, you know, I hear your comments about Q1 being the strongest. So as we look to Q4, though, is that a reasonable run rate for Q4, or is there sort of an expectation that, I don't know, due to holidays, that would taper off?
I'm sorry, can you repeat? I missed a few words of your question.
Sorry, I'm just asking about the seasonality in Q4 for Atkins from a revenue perspective. If what we saw in the third quarter, if that's a reasonable run rate to expect for the fourth quarter, or is there any seasonality there we need to consider?
Give me a second. I'd say that's fairly reasonable.
Okay. And then lastly, just in terms of the adjusted E&C effective tax rate, I think you touched on the fact that it was a little bit higher in the third quarter, but how do we think about that for the fourth quarter? What's a good expectation for adjusted E&C effective tax rate in Q4?
Yeah. Well, we said previously, because at the first half point, right, we were running at a very low tax rate, and we'd been saying we'd been running slightly under 20 for the year, and we still think that's in the area, so around the 20% mark.
For the full year.
Yeah. So Q3 is unusual.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
We'll now take our next question from the line of Devin Dodge with BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good afternoon. So in the oil and gas segment, the book-to-bill has been below one so far this year. Obviously, the Chevron order will help here, but should we be expecting revenues to kind of pull back a little bit in the coming quarters, or do you see things in your pipeline that could, bring booking levels or backlog levels back up?
Yeah, I think part of the sort of part of the dynamic there is that we continue to work off some of the major projects. I mean, the Chevron contract has huge potential, but basically there won't be a huge amount going to the backlog by the nature of the contract in terms of it's a future call off contract. So you know, there isn't a specific number within the contract, therefore we're not going to put a specific number in the backlog for that. And we've got a number of, you know, we've got a number of contracts like that. I mean, we'd like to see us win some more contracts with long-term existing clients that basically take the oil and gas backlog back up above $3 billion is the aim. So not everything. I mean, again, probably the key message there is we get some really good contracts that are long-term call-offs that actually never end up or take a long time for it to end up in the backlog per se because of the nature of the contract.
Okay, fair enough. And Neil, you mentioned earlier about some media reports of the new CANDU reactor opportunity in Argentina. Just can you talk about what role SNC would play there if this goes forward and what kind of impact we would see from like a revenue perspective for SNC?
Yeah, I mean it's pretty difficult to give the revenue number, but I mean it's two new reactors, and we would play a role around the reactors themselves, the technology, the CANDU piece. So inside the reactor facility, we'd be owners, engineer, designer. With all the certification aspects of that contract, so they are significant, but they've always been very cautious about the fact that a nuclear new build is talked about a lot and not a lot comes to fruition. But both of these looks like. The country, in terms of Argentina, really wants them. They've got CANDU reactors already, and the Chinese appear to be in a position where they want to provide funding and help the development of it. So we're pretty bullish about, in a nuclear perspective, we're pretty bullish about all of that.
Okay. And should we think about this? How should we think about this from a financial risk perspective? Would this be like a fee for service kind of type work, or would it be fixed price?
No, fee for service. Okay. Certainly won't be fixed price.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll now take the next question from the line of Frederick Bastian with Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I just have one question. I know that SNC in the past has been lukewarm to P3 opportunities in the U.S. Given the highly litigious nature of the market, is this changing in any way given the growth of the market right now and also post-Atkins, your acquisition is potentially a competitive advantage there?
I think our reticence before, maybe 6 months, a year ago, was it wasn't just about the contracting piece. It was also about the fact that we were in the process, really, of getting really clear and concentrating on our infrastructure sectors. I mean, Ian and the team were focusing down on what is our core business, you know, what is our top prospects. We felt as if the Canadian infrastructure market at that time had more than enough prospects to keep us busy and provide growth. But I think Atkins does provide that additional impetus around the work that they're doing in order for us to continue and build then on the infrastructure and the P3 work.
Perfect. Thanks for that.
We'll now take the next question from David Silver with Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. Apologies if this was asked before, but of your 51 cents in adjusted EPS from your ENC operations, how much of that was attributable to Atkins? How accretive was Atkins this quarter?
Well, it depends. I mean, you have to look at the if you look at our segmented results, so you will see how much EBIT is contributed from Atkins, which is $73 million. So
right.
Then you can kind of run that through the P&L. Now, you have to, obviously, with the Atkins acquisition, there's a number of other factors that came into play. The financing cost has changed and so forth. But overall, when you take the full picture of the added contribution, the financing cost and all that, and the you basically get to an accretive position. So we're pleased with that. But you can see the exact contribution and can run it down to EPS if you want.
Okay, I'll estimate that. Thank you. And then on slide 10, I wanted to ask you a question about the $5 billion in value that you've assessed for your P3 portfolio. I guess that's up, a fair amount from 9 months ago, let's say. Could you just qualitatively discuss where the increase in your assessment of the value is from? And then can you also just remind me if the BBGI assets are in that $5 billion at 100% or 20% or how are they being evaluated? Thank you.
Okay, so just on the first part of your question, the $5 billion is actually coming from the analyst review of our capital portfolio, and the largest piece of that is the 407. So that's how it's derived and presented here. So it's really coming from the analysts that follow our stock. On the BBGI, if you don't mind repeating the question, I'm not sure I followed that.
Yeah. So I was trying to maybe ask you to do an incremental analysis from maybe year-end 2016 and just trying to get your assessment of where the increase, in the value was. And then, separately, since four projects and now a fifth project will be contributed to the partnership with BBGI,
yeah.
I was wondering how that's reflected in the $5 billion total.
Well, it's tough to answer because I don't come up with the $5 billion per se. It's the individual analysts that come with it. But BBGI is essentially buying into the infrastructure partner fund, and they're buying 80% of the shared unit of that. So the overall consideration at the time of announcement was about $200 million from BBGI, if I remember correctly. So far, we've put in four of the assets into it, which amounted to a 90. So then there's a remaining asset to cover the rest of it. So right now the way this works is at the end of Q3 you will have SNC owns 20% of the units of the LP, which includes these four C's assets.
If you go to slide 19 you'll find probably a better breakdown in terms of how the market views the capital portfolio there.
Okay, will do. No, so I think I'm coming at this from an incorrect perception, so my
That's okay, question. No problem.
Yeah, just on slide 13, where you break down the fixed and reimbursable portions of your portfolio, I had kind of a philosophical question for Neil. If you look at the whole company, including Atkins, your fixed percentage of project work is at 55%. However, if you include Atkins, then you're closer to 70%. And I was wondering how you philosophically view that. I remember when you started, one of your priorities was to kind of reduce the overall risk profile by shifting a higher percentage of work from fixed price contracts to reimbursable. And I'm just wondering if that has changed with the addition of Atkins. In other words, do you still want to lower that 55%, or are you more comfortable from a portfolio perspective with the risk-reducing effects to your overall portfolio of the addition of Atkins?
No, I mean, one of the priorities of the acquisition of Atkins was, from a business model perspective, was to reduce our exposure, our risk exposure, including bringing the fixed price down. I mean, I think in terms of that particular slide, slide 13, we've got a bit of apples and oranges in there because we've only got one quarter of Atkins, which is predominantly very low risk in there, whereas we've got three quarters. But I think by the time this all sort of winds out into the beginning of next year, I think you'll see that fixed price profile coming down, and that's where we want it to be.
Okay, thank you very much.
We'll now take the next question from the line of Maxim Sytchev with National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon.
Next question.
I just had a quick question in terms of maybe some context around Christian Brown resuming his role at as the head of oil and gas. Any context there that you might provide for us? Thanks.
As you know, I mean, Christian was part of the acquisition process. He led the integration. The integration's pretty much complete, and we're just taking one of our talented individuals and putting them back into the operation team. So it's nothing complicated. It's just we think we've got the best player there for that sector.
Okay, fair enough. And then, is it possible to get any incremental data points on Atkins in terms of if the revenue Q on Q was up, is EBITDA up year on year, sort of anything that we can compare to kind of 2016 run rate?
I think it's overall it's pretty consistent with 2016, except for the fact that, you know, the margin's up a bit, up 1%, and part of that is through the elimination of some of the corporate costs that Sylvain talked about earlier, and then, you know, we'll have a bit more kicking in Q4.
Okay, and what about organic growth and backlog? Is the business what's the business doing right now?
Well, I think it's performing. I mean, it's difficult to say in terms of just one quarter, but it's pretty consistent with where it was before, which is they were very much concentrating on lower growth but increased in margin and efficiency, and the first quarter in our first full quarter as part of SNC, that trend's continuing.
Okay, that's helpful. And last question, just in terms of the transaction you've done a couple of days ago, DTS, how do you exactly envision leveraging the capabilities across other segments for the company, if you don't mind sharing your ideas so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much around digital engineering and survey work that can be dropped into the model proprietary software that they've developed and drop into a model in order to help with O&M capabilities and services to clients. That's just applicable to just about everything that we do within O&M. So if we can find a way of monitoring and surveying, a rail line that we are maintaining, like the Canada line, for instance, do it photographically, then drop it into a model in order to do the analysis of it, then that's far more efficient than how we currently do it. Which is a bit more manual survey work. So, and that can just be applied to just about everything that we do within the O&M arena. So, first priority is get them embedded into the the Atkins organization in the United States. But then we see the opportunity to leverage that capability across everything else that we do within the O&M, within the O&M space.
Okay, but is it fair enough to say that it's more sort of a cost efficiency sort of improvement, or do you also envision some revenue generation from this particular asset?
There will be revenue generation, but it's about a differentiated offering. It's about staying one or two steps ahead of the competition and providing that differentiated service to all of our clients. That's the main thrust.
Okay. That's very helpful. Thanks, Paul. That's it for me.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll now take our next question from the line of Chris Murray with AltaCorp Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just very quickly, just turning to kind of the earnings profile for the infrastructure group, for the capital group. Interestingly, I would have thought that the other income with the assets moved to BBGI would have actually been down quarter over quarter. Just wondering if you could maybe shed some light on how we should be thinking about the earnings profile, kind of X407, over the coming quarters, and any impact that you could see moving the next asset into the fund, and any thoughts as well. You talked a little bit at the Investor Day about perhaps investing in another private equity infrastructure fund. Any thoughts around what we should think about in that 2018 event?
Well, maybe just on the first part of your question around the earnings profiles, for sure when we put the assets into the fund, there's going to be a decline from the revenues we're getting out of those assets. Now this transfer happened in kind of later part of Q3, and then we'll have the last seed assets probably towards the end of the year. That's kind of what we're aiming at this point. So into next year, we should see a decline from the revenues that were coming from those assets. In terms of the second part of your question, in terms of new assets coming in, I think it will take a bit of a while after the fifth asset's coming in to have the next round. This is basically coming, as we said a number of times, as we're looking for our other assets to reach maturity, and those are either under construction at the moment or they are post-construction but under warranty, and we're still just making sure that everything's stabilized before we can put them in the fund.
Okay.
And on the third piece, I think you're referring to the Carlyle Fund.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that we continue to work as an advisor to Carlyle, and basically, as that completes and prospects come into it, then ultimately we will co-invest. I mean, we will. We will not be investing anything this year, but next year we will co-invest as the first E&C prospects in the work materializes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back over to Mr. Jesme for any closing remarks or additional comments.
Great, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. If you have any further questions, please don't hesitate to call me directly. Thank you very much, everyone. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude the conference call for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect your lines.